Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys, and Lady of Jameson, Lord Brett of House Fry, Sir David of House Fraser, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry.
Welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into John 2 of A Clash of Kings. And in our Maester's study, we will be discussing The Haunted Forest.
Wow. Yeah, man. Short chapter today, Ez. We got a handful of these shorter chapters here at the beginning of this book. I don't think that this chapter is going to take us very long, so Ez asked me to come up with a funny story, so I'm thinking of that currently, and I'm sure by the time we get there, maybe I'll have something.
Yeah. People are going, wow, how short was the chapter? I mean, it's surprisingly
I think it was four pages.
Yeah, but it's good. There's some good stuff in there. I mean, it's pretty cool. There's some connections to later on, and yeah, I'm happy with it. But yeah, dude, I don't know. It's I don't know. This whole first book, first section of this second book here is been great. And it's actually got me fired up. I told you, this chapter was so short. I told you that I kind of sprinted through about three or four chapters in my just, mm-hmm. I got going and I was like, "Wow, okay, here we go." And we talked about that before. Like sometimes you go through this stint where you're like, "Okay, I can't put it down." And I just, I'm just plowing through. So that's kind of where I am right now. Watch, I'll probably hit a Danny chapter and then... Oh, wait, no, the Danny chapters are good in this book. Let's go.
Wow.
Wow. I'm kidding.
Wow.
People are hating on me right now. No,
they are.
I like Danny. I like Danny a lot. Okay, I like these chapters in this book better. So, But hey, how you been? You all right?
Oh, I'm good, man. Real quick, I guess we'll tell people... there's not a YouTube version of this week's episode because Sir Ezra is out of internet data. We're rectifying that.
That's true, actually.
Ez is literally moving for the podcast. People
are probably thinking like they're like, there's no way Ez does all these podcasts and he doesn't have internet. People are calling baloney, but it's actually true. I've reached the data gap,
Right. That's funny. Some people are like, what? Data caps? Yeah, for those of you who don't know, if you live in rural areas, sometimes your internet providers
suck.
Have data caps. And so you can only do so much. Ez literally has these Verizon jetpacks, which are little mobile hotspots. I think they've got like a 15 gig
allowance.
Cap. Is that something like that?
Yeah.
Allowance. Oh, yeah, that's an even better word for it. Allowance. And now that we've started going to video, he's burning through a lot more of these things. So he's like, okay, it's time to move. And so he may be getting in a new place. Hopefully tomorrow. So that'll be great.
Well, really, hopefully tomorrow I'll be getting a word back on the new establishment. And let me just say this. I was saving this. I'm going to talk about Nest since it came up. I was talking to my buddy Lane from an unexpected podcast, and I was kind of talking about, I like the idea of being a wizard, being this sort, or maybe like Obi-Wan, like a hermit, who just kind of lives off in the, out by himself, wherever. Nobody really knows where he comes into town, but then when he, he leaves town, and we don't really know where he goes and lives. Like, that's kind of how I, you know, want to live my life. I like to just go in town, get my things, go back out, and then just live this hermit, like, you know, lifestyle. So the place I'm looking at, let me tell you, it is it at least has the good internet, and but it's got that vibe. It's got that. That's about all it's got. Really,
does it? Is that all it's got?
Yeah.
So it does have running water. So I mean, that's good.
Right. Well, yeah, it's running in that I have to, you know, pump it myself, but it's it'll work, dude. Perfect. Something else I was thinking about with the internet. So do you remember, like, did anyone else? Because this just kind of hit me. Like, remember, like, a time before the internet? Like, do you remember when? Yeah. When you had dial-up and you had to, you know, like you put towels over, like, the modem so that way... I'm serious. That way, you know, it's like midnight, right? And you're trying to fire up the internet and then, you know, you're trying to get on Yahoo Messenger to talk to some girl in high school. And so you find... That was me. That was that. So I've been living this lifestyle for a long time, all right? Oh.
Jiminy. Ah, geez. No, I do remember dial-up internet. Yeah, it is weird thinking about the world before internet. And now even thinking about the world before, like, high-speed internet, you know, like, thinking about what it was like back in the day when you had 56K, and it's like, what? God. Yeah. Like, what was that, you know? Like,
yep.
Crazy. Crazy time. How did people even live? Like, how did you get a hold of people?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know if I've told this here or not before, but I didn't even have a cell phone until I was a senior.
You used to use payphones.
I used to use payphones. Yeah, I'd say rendezvous, man. I'd call people. I expected them to show up. You know, I'd say, hey, meet at this time. I'll be there. And man, I had a, you know,
I would get calls from Ezra in high school, and I'd be like, where are you? He's like, well, I'm at a payphone. I'm like, well, which one? And he'd be like, well, it's at this corner of this and this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was like, hold on. Let me print out MapQuest so I can get there.
Oh, my gosh. Dude, I for the longest time, I used to drive by, and I used to really appreciate that in the back of that Kroger's parking lot, there was a payphone still there. I don't know if it worked or not, but it was there for so long. And there was one up by JCPenney. There was one, just in a couple different places. And I knew where they were at. I knew where to go to use them. It was great. Just different time. Yeah.
I don't think I have no idea how people got around. I mean, I guess it's just, you just have to know the streets.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you get across the country? I mean, crazy. You got to find a phone, all this stuff.
I mean, what's wrong with this though? That's the thing. I mean, how is the internet a bad thing? You know, is it like, do we know, are we less resourceful? I don't know.
Has technology ruined us? I don't know.
Matt's like, no, not at all. Honestly, it's opened up so many avenues. Yeah. No, and really it has. It's the podcast and connecting with everybody. It's fantastic. I just kind of wondered if anybody remembered the time, the dark times, right?
Of pay phones.
Yeah. I'm glad you remember that, by the way, because I used to, that note card that I had was wore out. I actually still have your number memorized because you have the same number.
I do.
You know, 740.
Hey, whoa.
So anyway, yeah, upgrades coming. You know, it's wild that you've seen some upgrades on the podcast, and now it's like, all right, I've got to keep up to the upgrades. So here we go.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, man. Ooh, well, Ez, do you even have school this week? Is it canceled because of the coronavirus? Because let me tell you, that there are people getting it out by where I live, and we are freaking out. I'm staying indoors.
Well, you know? Yeah. Well, we actually, our school district issued, actually all districts around here kind of issued a thing saying, like, if you're sick, stay home, and that's okay with us. We'll help you get caught up and you know.
You sound a little sick.
Well, I was going to say, I know they sent that to the student body, but I took it to heart. I'm like, yeah, I got a little bit of a scratchy throat. I think I'll just, I don't want to, who knows? So, and really, I'm more trying to make light of it. It's kind of a freaky thing. It's like, the heck? I mean, the districts, well, actually we had in Ohio, we had several districts kind of shut down because of the flu. The flu was so bad that people during this flu season in the winter, school closed actually. So That's the first for me, anyways, as a teacher, where where school closed because the flu was that bad. I know that's happened before, and in different regions and places it sometimes happens, but it hadn't happened in Ohio for a long time. And so, yeah, they were like, you know, it's really bad. There's a couple of nasty strands of it going around. So, I don't know. Everybody just wash your hands. Hopefully everybody's, you know, it just kind of sucks. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, stay safe out there.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, all of my friends who, I have a bunch of friends who are nurses and stuff, and they all say that the flu is 10 times worse than the coronavirus.
Wow.
Well, it's, yeah, so, but it's like, well, you don't have coronavirus, so how do you know? Well, good point.
Yeah. I don't know, man. So. It's just, I don't know, when the president's speaking about it, I kind of feel like, yeah, it's, you know.
Big deal.
Yeah, so, anyway, well, hey, nobody's, I don't think there's anybody dying of sickness in this chapter, is there?
No, although it is cold there.
It's very cold.
And we're gonna get to that. So, all right. Well, there's nothing really to report. I have done a Wins a Winner search. Nothing really new going on in that front. But we are edging closer and closer. So Gurr has to finish this book fast if he wants to have it by that. Now we're into March. So
yeah. Yeah.
We're already 2 months in, man. You really got to get this thing going.
Yeah. I love the people who are so optimistic that they say he actually has the next two books done, and he's going to do some crazy bang, bang, back-to-back thing. I'm like, you people, I love you. I love you for your enthusiasm and everything, but it's just wild. It's kind of crazy to think. I'm hoping this book's done, Winds of Winter. I think he's sitting on it, and maybe so, you know, it's been sent to the editor or whoever, publisher. Yeah. So,
yeah. Also, other news here, really quick. I did get my Ice and Fire Con ticket. So everyone, actually the other day, for those of you guys in the Facebook group, we did a live stream, which was a lot of fun. And we actually just recorded an episode right there inside of that. And it was kind of cool having everyone's feedback while we were recording live. So for those of you guys who are in the Facebook group, stay tuned, because Ez and I might just turn on. We might just, you know, we start working on stuff, and then we're just kind of like, let's just go live and see what happens.
Yeah,
and that was definitely a ton of fun.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And so it was one of the reasons why I'm sort of like accelerating my plans to say, let's go ahead and upgrade the internet and do more of that. I'd love just to before podcast. We just had a funny moment before we started today, and I was actually kind of like, thankfully, you know, we weren't streaming that, but it would be funny, I guess, if it happened on accident. I don't know. It just, there's moments where it's like, I wish you guys could hear some of the discussion that is had before the show, sort of the pre-show. So yeah, that'd be a lot of fun to do. So look forward to that. Make sure you go in there and like that Facebook page and like the group or join the group. That's where, that's where the hangout was. It was inside the Facebook group.
Inside the Facebook group, yeah.
Yeah.
And it gives you guys the ability to comment live. So, okay, all right, as well, let's head on over to the Maester study, talk a little bit about the Haunted Forest.
Yeah, just real brief today, just that this is sort of a vast forest beyond the wall. It's north of the wall, northern Westeros, located beyond the Seven Kingdoms. It's inhabited by the Free Folk. It's bounded or bordered by to the west by the Frostfangs, and to the east by the Shivering Sea and the Bay of Seals. North of the Haunted Forest is the unmapped land of Always Winter. So that's sort of up there where we are at. The trees that we have up here, we have ash, we've got broadleaf, chestnut, ironwood, connection to a video game that we've played. We have oak, sentinel, soldier pine, weirwood. It is the only known location where one can find more than two or three weirwoods in a single place. The Fist of the First Men is an isolated hill found near the Milkwater in the western part of the forest. We'll get to that later. Let's see. The wood is named the Haunted Forest by the Brothers of the Night's Watch, who traditionally have cut all trees within half a mile of the wall. As the number of brothers has diminished over the centuries, however, the tree line has crept closer to the wall. Pretty neat. It's pretty much it. I mean, it's just kind of it we'll hear about the Haunted Forest in literally every single book going forward, except for I don't know that it's mentioned in A Feast with Crows, but yeah, it's mentioned quite a bit, and it's something that the Night's Watch will trek through. We'll come across different characters. We'll go through there, and it's a scary place. You know, in this week we kind of look at we come across a weirwood there that's pretty you know, daunting, if you will. So
yeah. John
starts to kind of think about how this place got its name as the Haunted Forest.
Yeah, John describes it. Yeah. He says that he sees one of the largest tree he thinks he's ever seen. So that's definitely pretty interesting. And then some quick quotes about it here. You know, from Tyrion, he's like, "Few axes had ever swung in that black wood, where even the moonlight could not penetrate the ancient tangle of root and thorn and grasping limb. Out there, the trees grew huge, and the rangers said they seemed to brood and knew not men. It was a small wonder the Night's Watch named it the Haunted Forest." Yeah, so just imagine it's so dark there. That I mean, you can't. It's just pretty much like pitch black inside this forest. All right. Well, if you're ready, we can move on over to the reread. So we can do that. So last time we were with Daenerys. Daenerys won. Daenerys decides to follow the Red Comet deep into the Red Waste to protect her newborn dragons. Many of her Khalasar die before they find shelter in a ruined city. There, Ser Jorah Mormont tells her about his second wife, Lyanna Hightower. While her people rest, Daenerys sends her three Blood Riders to scout, and Jogo returns with three strangers from the great city of Qarth. This week we're into Jon 2. Last time we were with Jon. Jon Snow finds Samwell Tarly in the dark library cellar of Castle Black, where Sam has found a number of maps for the Great Ranging. Out in the courtyard, they watch the new recruits practicing, and Jon talks with Donal Noy. After they present their maps, Lord Commander Jorah Mormont discusses Maester Aemon's past with Jon. This week, Jon 2, Jon Snow helps investigate White Tree, the fourth abandoned wilding village they have encountered. Lord Commander Jorah Mormont dispatches Jon with a report for Samwell Tarly to send back to Castle Black. After a short talk with Sam, Jon returns to Mormont to discuss his uncle and how he might have how he may have reacted to the abandoned villages.
Yep, and that is something I was thinking about when I was talking to you earlier. Just that one thought, you know, how would Benjen have reacted going through the abandoned villages? Like, what are his thoughts and stuff? And it's caused us to really, you know, go back and explore a topic that we've explored in the past and we may look at in the future, whether it be on YouTube or here on the podcast. But old Benjen Stark, it's got me thinking again.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that, you know, as we on our Patreon series, we talk our extended edition. We've been picking characters, talking about how they could fit into the show. And Benjen's certainly one that we want to do here shortly, just because, hey, there's a lot of variables, you know, surrounding Benjen. And I think you and I are both maybe under the belief that he may still be alive and may not be a Cold Hands type character like we see in the show. Might just be alive. So,
yeah. So we'll talk more about that later. It's kind of crazy. What do you think about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So, White Tree, the village was named on Sam's old maps. Jon did not think it much a village. Four tumble-down one-room houses of unmortared stone surrounded an empty sheepfold and a well. The houses were roofed with sod, the windows shuttered with ragged pieces of hide, and above them loomed the pale limbs and dark red leaves of a monstrous great weirwood. It was the biggest tree Jon Snow had ever seen, the trunk near 8 feet wide, the branches spreading so far that the entire village was shaded beneath their canopy. The size did not disturb him so much as the face. The mouth especially, no simple carved slash, but a jagged hollow large enough to swallow a sheep. And then, they talk about this tree for a little bit here. And something I kind of found like really interesting right at the bat is when they say that John says he heard that you could never tell a lie in front of one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I found pretty interesting. And I was kind of thinking about that. And I was like, is it the power of a tree? You know, if you go back to the Game of Thrones, Catelyn always felt really weird around the trees, like they were watching her, which ties somewhat into Bran, possibly Bloodraven, you know, the Three-Eyed Crow. And, you know, maybe the idea of you could never tell a lie in front of one because maybe the Three-Eyed Crow, you know, in foreshadowing something later, the Three-Eyed Crow can look through the trees throughout history and kind of see you. And maybe that's, you know, what Ger is like foreshadowing for, or maybe it's because the power of the gods and you just can't do it, or it's just a saying. So there's a lot to kind of, to pick up that in there.
Well, I was thinking, you're kind of beating around the bush here, right? But like, why does Catelyn Stark feel so weird around the weirwood trees? Because she's a liar, okay? You know, she said stuff about Ashara Dane, you know, that she shouldn't have said. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, she feels a little nervous, all right? I mean, she shouldn't have brought up that whole topic, you know, and Eddard told her, like, hey, it's enough of that. Don't bring that name up. I don't want to hear that name again. So,
wow.
Hey, you participating in that gossip? Oh, I'm kidding. I actually love that Catelyn quite a bit. It's just, I think it's more just that it's odd that it's a different way of life and a way of thinking. You know, the Mormonts, Jorah Mormont says the same thing, that his father kind of, you know, told him that you can't tell a lie in front of a weirwood tree. And it's sort of more odd and eerie. And actually, really what it could have been that Catelyn was sensing and feeling there is this power. You know, John could feel the power. It wasn't just old. The ravens are saying old, old, old. And then he said, and powerful. He could sense, he could feel its power. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe that's sort of it's like pulsating with power in some way.
Yeah. Right here. Thorin Smallwood dismounted beside the trunk, dark in his plate and mail. Look at that face. Small wonder men feared them when they first came to Westeros. I'd like to take an axe to the bloody thing myself. John said, my lord father believed, no man could tell a lie in front of a heart tree. The old gods knew when men are lying. My father believed the same, said the old bear. I mean, that's pretty, you know, that's kind of interesting there. Maybe that's an old kind of northern gods saying, or not really saying, but yeah, just some thought.
A belief,
A belief, yeah, that gets passed down and passed down that, hey, no, the old gods know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they do. I mean, like, that's... Well, also, oh my gosh, I've had such an eye-opening experience here recently with like, I came across a few theories and a few videos that had me really thinking differently about these gods and thinking differently about the presence of a god in this world. And then George Martin, his belief on that. And now I'm more looking at not necessarily the gods, but like just the power or the magical, I guess, properties of some of these beings, characters, you know, dragons, werewoods, you know, stuff like that. It's really got me thinking. And in this one in particular, it's like it's old. It's been around for a long time, and it has a lot of knowledge and has seen a lot. So mm-hmm. it has a lot to contribute, a lot to say to anybody who would, you know, shift into it and connect in the old weirwood network and stuff. So yeah, and it's just I think about that, and then I think about the sacrifice that's going on in the inside here. They have the goat. Right, they got this the goat offering or the skull that they look at, and oftentimes the red that you see coming out of these trees or whatever is blood. And so you go back to like blood magic, and you go back to like that kind of connection, and you think, geez, you know, what is it? What is it that it's just different, I guess. I don't know. I'm working on a whole thing just on the idea that. It's less the gods and it's more this that there's some power in these things. There's some magic or whatever, and it's this life energy or whatever, or the lack of it or whatever. So yeah, when I came across this tree, I thought, man, this is really really interesting. And that its mouth is big enough that they would maybe you know, burn something in there or sacrifice something or whatever. Kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then he's Jor is looking at this skull, you know, wish the bones could talk, right? And then he says, the children of the forest could speak to the dead, it said, but I can't. Which I think is also interesting, because that's, to my recollection, the first time that they talk about the children of the forest being able to speak to specifically the dead. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly something interesting, because, you know, if, again, is that a saying or something that's been passed down and kind of manipulated over time? And maybe instead of,
right,
oh, well, the children created the dead, or the children,
mm-hmm,
you know, and then
it's been distorted over time.
Been,
yeah,
distorted. Right. You think like the game of telephone. Right. And so it's just been morphed into the children could speak to the dead. It's sad. Right. And so you add that on there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. That is crazy to kind of think about, like, given what we've seen in the show, makes us kind of think that, right? Makes us kind of wonder if that wasn't a saying that has been twisted or turned and or lost its true meaning over time. So, yeah.
Yeah, instead of they made them. So that's interesting. So they're going through the houses, you know, he says, you know, get up to the top of the tree, let's have a look. All of the hounds brought up too. So they're kind of doing some scouting to see, you know, where they at, what's going on. And a lot of these little villages they've hit, there's nobody there. They're all abandoned. And a lot of it is because they've moved out. You know, we know as our reread, they've moved out for several reasons, to go join up with Mance Rayder, or, you know, they aren't really alive anymore, or they've fled south like Osha. And so that's certainly that's what the Night's Watch is finding out right now.
Yeah, exactly. What's his name? Giant, right? Gets to the top of the tree and he's having a good look around, and they're trying to figure this out. It's odd that they would just up and leave. I did think it was kind of funny. Who is it? It's either Dollar said or Talad, who kind of says when they go into that little they enter into one of those hovels or whatever, they enter into one of those houses or whatever, and they. It just looks really, to him, it looks like it's a nice place to sleep, you know, some straw, you know, over in the corner and stuff. And it's sort of a funny little,
what a dismal, John is talking, you know, what a dismal place to live. I was born in a house like this, you know, declared Dolores Ed.
Yeah. He says, I'd give all the golden Castle Rock to sleep in a bed again. You call that a bed? Yeah. It's just, yeah. So you can see the different walks of life, where they come from.
Yeah, kinda. If it's softer than the ground and has a roof over it, I call it a bed.
Right. So, but it's odd, right? There's no trace of these people, and this is the fourth village. Did you say that the fourth one that they've come through? That they're all empty. You know, John says, "What do you think happened to them all?" And Dollar said, "You know, something worse than we can imagine." Well, I might be able to imagine it, but I'd sooner not. Bad enough to know you're going to come to some awful end without thinking about it a fourth time. So, yeah, you've got two of the hounds were sniffing around the door as they reemerged. The other dogs ranged through the village. Chet was cursing them loudly, his voice thick with anger he had never seemed to put aside. Let's see. Yeah, the light flittered through the red leaves of the weirwood. Made the boils on his face look even more inflamed than usual. When he saw John, his eyes narrowed. There was no love lost between them. So a little foreshadowing there just between those two characters. Definitely don't get along, and that animosity is going to kind of grow as they continue north, and he continues to be more agitated. But yeah, gone. Gone. The raven continues just kind of to say it over and over, gone. So it's a mystery.
Yeah, and that's kind of the backdrop again to this chapter. That raven is always, you know, interesting, you know, just saying, it's almost like the peanut gallery, right? You know, just off to the side, hey, you know, it's like, here's your scene and what's going on, and then you've got the raven back there kind of adding into it with his quirks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see here. So they sent Giant up to look over, the, like, in the trees, and he's coming back down. they're talking about whether they should camp there tonight in this place, just because there's a little bit of shelter, and but there's not enough shelter for everybody, you know. So some people are going to be kind of griping about who gets to sleep inside, who doesn't, you know, what have you. He asked Giant how much daylight they have, about 3 hours, and Mormont kind of decides that they're going to press north, and they're looking for this lake. Giant was able to spot a lake, and they want to make camp on the shore there. Perchance they can find a few fish or something. And this is where we you know, John is going to go fetch a piece of paper, and he has to check back in with Maester Aemon just to sort of say, same thing again. Here we go. Like this the mystery kind of continues. These villages are empty. We can't find the wildlings. We have no idea where they're at. And he's writing back to Maester Aemon just to kind of document and journal what's happening. And that's Enter Sam in this chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see maybe what kind of advice Maester Aemon can give. You know, he's studied those books for long, long, long time. Maybe he can kind of also provide some sort of intel, right, to them. And that's also, you know, what Sam has with bringing those books here. And they talk about that a little bit. You know, they say, hey, well, there's a lake to the north, a few flint hills, nothing else to see. And then they say, we're going to camp here. You know, how much daylight remains to us? 3 hours. You know, we're going to press on. If we can make the lake, we can make a camp, possibly catch a few fish. Then he writes to Maester Aemon there. I mean, again, not really a lot happens in this chapter, guys, unfortunately. They're just going to do a little bit. There's a few men that are going to go out and do a little bit of scouting. They're just kind of going to setting up, you know, camp here.
And really he's thinking like right here at the end, two things happen. He's thinking about his sword hand, he's thinking about Arya, he's thinking about you know, he's got to keep his hand flexed, and you know, without his sword hand, a man could die, etc. But this is when I said, you know, here enters Sam, right? So once he decides, yeah, I gotta, you know, contact Maester Aemon, here comes Sam with his ravens, and he had taught. Now this was my big question, Sir Matt, to you. Yeah, let me read this to you, and then I'll ask the question. So John found Sam with the other stewards watering his horses. He had three to tend, his own mount and two pack horses, each bearing a large wire and wicker cage full of ravens. The birds flapped their wings at John's approach and screamed at him through the bars. A few shrieks sounded suspiciously like words. "Have you been teaching them to talk?" he asked Sam. "A few words. Three of them can say snow." "One bird croaking my name was bad enough," said John, "and snow's nothing a black brother wants to hear about. Snow often meant death in the north." So, interesting, you know, he says, "Have you been teaching them to talk?" Sam just says, "A few words, three of them can say snow." Not that he taught them to say snow.
But that they can say it.
That they can say it. And I don't think he taught them to say, why would Sam teach these birds to say snow?
Exactly. Especially when John says, you know, especially when John immediately afterwards is like, why, you know, that's not really a great word to teach them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and then again, it's a connection to him, and then snow in the north often meant death. So it could be a warning, you know? So I don't know. We always think about what these ravens are saying and their significance. And I thought, wow, that's cool. Sam doesn't actually say that. Yes, I taught them words. He just says, you know, a few words, three of them can say snow. So that's kind of odd. Another thing that's interesting is that you find out that Sam, as the longer they journey, the other men are getting kind of, we kind of skipped over it just a little bit there, but like they're scared. They're a little bit, you can see fear, like they're not going to show it, but if you look close enough for the signs that you're unnerved a little bit, here in the forest, you, like John's getting that vibe. And I'm sure that, Lord Commander Mormont is seeing that as well, but Sam is not. He's actually getting braver each day. He's getting more like he feels like this is not so bad. And mm-hmm. It's just sort of odd to see that. And we kind of forget that happens a little earlier with Sam. He's not as scared. He's just like, well, we're just out here taking a ride, just seeing the land, and I'm tending these ravens, and that's that. So
yeah. Then John, you know, John says to him, you know, we'll make a ranger out of you yet, right? And he says, next thing you'll want to be an outrider like Gren. Shall I speak to the old bear? You know, don't you dare. Sam pulled the hood over his enormous black cloak and clambered awkwardly back onto his horse. I had hoped we might stay in the night in the village, he said. It would be nice to sleep under a roof again. Two roofs for us all, said John. And then, as I guess, you know, and then like they talk about how they're, as they're making camp, you know, if you go back just a little bit, they're all kind of staring up at the comet again, the comet prevalent here. And John talks about how, you know, there are 200 men, you know, our forces, right? 200 men rode north. And so, you know, they haven't really entered battle or anything yet. And possibly, I mean, this chapter, you know, it's similar to that Arya chapter we had that was short a couple weeks ago. It's just kind of a transition, you know, we're Gurr is just kind of setting the stage here, in between some of these bigger chapters. And I think part of the reason he did that is you have, you know, a really, really long, you know, Daenerys chapter, and you had a really long Davos and Theon chapter. So he's saying, okay, well, I can keep the reader moving along with Arya and Jon and just kind of pushing them just a little bit forward here, but they don't have to take enormous steps yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of a slow build and stuff. And there actually is, when you look at the way he has structured some of the chapters and you look at like, just if you only look at that writing style and that structure, I was looking at this as I went a few chapters ahead. I thought, dang, there's a couple. So some of these shorter chapters have similar style to them, and there's they're connected in different ways. I'm gonna have to go back and pencil down some of those connections. But I remember I was driving back today, and I was listening. Gosh, I was ahead. I was in another Arya chapter, and I just thought, wow, this is really interesting. The kind of connections that you when you listen. And you kind of wonder why George, you know, puts chapters the way that he does. You know, why not just do John back to Arya, back to John, back to Arya? What, you know, why does he throw somebody else in there? There's a reason. And a lot of times it's to throw you off of maybe these hidden little connections or nods or similar structure that might clue you into, you know,
bigger
something
secrets.
That's this. Yeah. Yeah. So. That's also why I've always said it's really neat to go and to read the book in a couple of different ways, you know, to read it through just one point of view, or read two people's point of view, read a region, you know, focus on just Westeros and then leave Daenerys out or vice versa. It's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's mostly the chapter. This is when then John starts talking to Jorah Mormont about, you know, his uncle, right? His uncle Benjen, mm-hmm. a little bit there. They rode in silence until John said, if my uncle had found all these villages empty as well, he would have made it his purpose to learn why, Lord Mormont finished. Then they talk about, you know, we'll be 300 when Corrin joins us. Whatever enemy waits out there, we will not find so easy to deal with. We will find them, John, I promise you. Or they will find us, thought John. So still a little, you know, hesitation in John's voice. But, you know, first of all, let's go get Corrin Halfhand. He's a great swordsman. And I still think Benjen's out there alive. Maybe not even as Cold Hands. I think he might just be out there.
Yeah, we really, I mean, I know it's kind of, it seems, you know, Mormont seems very sure. I don't know. I know that a lot of people were kind of, let's see. Yeah, some of the veterans would say, we've seen this before. He's been gone too long. There's no way that you could survive. But there's something to him being a Stark and being significant. And then they bring this up here again as to, like, this would have led him on. This would have driven him further. The crazy part where I start to get a little discouraged is that we go as far later on in this story as to see Mance Rayder and to meet up. And it's just like, you know, at every point where you think you should meet him, you don't. And then when you meet a mysterious character like Cold Hands, you're sort of like, maybe that's him. But
right.
But then, I don't know. So we'll have to talk more about that later and go back and pull up the text and actually read again what's going on there, because it's just... crazy. It's crazy because they chose the actor. I mean, the same actor to play him in the show. Is that really telling us something? Is it just, yeah, he's not, you know, Cold Hands is not Benjen, but maybe they are, air quote, the same. Who knows?
Or maybe they just fit him into the role. I mean, you look at other characters, you know, Jorah Mormont taking on the role of John Connington in the books a little bit. You know, John Connington's the one with grayscale. So, I mean, there's definitely, you know, some characters sometimes in the shows, a character does something that a book character would have done instead. You know, Donald Noy doesn't even exist in the show.
One thing just as we get ready to, because I know as soon as we stop recording here, you and I are going to keep talking about this, but I go back to Leaf and the what was said about Cold Hands, air quote Cold Hands, like just that he had died long ago. I mean, and that he, you know, so that he's something different to him, very different. So I'll say that. That's it.
And I think we did a Patreon episode on the possibility, and a lot of people point to it and think that it could be. There's the whole who is Cold Hands, a friend?
Mm-hmm.
And that he could be Sir Duncan the Tall.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So I don't know. It's fun to speculate on it and to think about it. I just think the book offers many different possibilities, and so I like the idea that Benjen would just actually at one point come back in some awesome way. Maybe who knows what that's going to be, but because it feels like we've explored everywhere we can explore in the North. I know the North is vast and stuff, and he could just been hiding somewhere.
Well,
you know, and
if you want to, if you want a crazy theory, all right.
Yeah, I'm always down for that.
Could he be on Skagos, which is kind of,
dude, I almost said that.
He's not. It's not. It's kind of like wildling territory that people can just go to, right? I mean, it's kind of. I mean, you just never know.
Yeah. 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 Oh man. Yeah. Well. Okay. I don't know. People think we've exhausted that one, but I really don't think we have. I actually think there's more to kind of think about when because we've started to think, you know, Winds of Winter, where are all of our characters at? And it's like I was working on the North. Remember I told you this, I had started with Jon Snow and I then went to Melisandre and Selyse and everybody who's up there. And I thought to myself, well, who else is up there? I'm like, Benjen? Like, where's he at? And then we read this chapter this week. And so, I don't know. We'll keep thinking about it.
Yeah, you forget about him. You forget about him. So, okay. All right. Well, we do have a Raven today. Hello, good sirs. I have a question concerning the Others. In the books, Sam reads a passage from a book that states that anyone killed by the Others can then be raised again and join the army of the dead. To me, that says you have to fall via a white or a white walker. However, the show plays it that anyone who has died at all can be raised, you know, with the example of the dead Starks in the crypts. What are your thoughts on this? Which way do you think is correct? Thanks for your time and the podcast, Sir Jeremy of House JM. Mm.
Okay, so the Others, and you know, I think the point that's made there is that the way it's described or the way it's seen in the TV show is that the Crypts of Winterfell could come alive themselves, and even though we know that for the most part that they were not killed by, an other or what have you, or if you want to use the term Night King and his people, whatever, wasn't killed by them. So how is it that they could have control over them and raise the dead there?
Yes.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's that they can control any of the dead. I think there has to be, and I'm trying to think if there's an example I think it's like they have to have had a part in the killing or have had their touch on it, on that individual directly, right?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I don't know, because, you know, again, we don't really see them so much in the books as much as we've seen them in the show. And I would have to imagine that I think maybe they do have to be, you have to, an other or a, you know, or a white kills them and then they can then control them. But when you think about Craster's baby, right? Mm-hmm. How they touch it. Is it killing it? Is it just turning it into a white walker? That's kind of interesting because he doesn't die and then get turned into something. He gets turned into something while he's still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's their touch or their influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like if you could, you know, walk into, well, it doesn't even, forget Winterfell. If you were down in any crypt or any graveyard in the South, does the Night King or whoever have the power to raise the dead there?
Well, in the shows, obviously.
That's what they're kind of, that's oh, it's a little
yeah,
bit.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think they just take a little bit of liberty there to make a scary scene in the crypts of Winterfell, you know, to say, yeah. Oh, we're safe in here. Oh, but wait, the dead are in there too. Yeah. I don't think
that's good. It's going to be that way in the books.
No, but even just that they have that ability or that power. Yeah.
Well, and you have to imagine, I feel like their army would be way bigger. I mean, well, mm-hmm. again, they can do it in the show. The show is different because everything in TV, everything gets scaled completely differently, you know, just because of the way you have to make it work for television. Yeah. And so maybe I don't know in the books. I don't know. I think I'm leaning more towards no. They can't just raise they can't just raise anything. They have to kill them first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me read a couple things here from, you know, okay. Let's go to the source here. Let's go to Old Nan. This is, what is this? Brand 4. Old Nan nodded and said that in that darkness, the others came for the first time. They were cold things, dead things that hated iron and fire and the touch of the sun, and every creature with hot blood in its veins. They swept over Holdfast and cities and kingdoms, felled heroes and armies by the score, riding their pale dead horses and leading hosts of the slain. So there you go, leading hosts of the slain. All the swords of men could not stay their advance, and even maidens and suckling babes found no pity in them. They hunted the maids through frozen forest and fed their dead servants on the flesh of human children. Her voice had dropped very low, almost to a whisper. John, kind of later on, recounts sort of almost the same thing. The same tale that Old Nan had used and had said. He could hear her voice again and the click, click, click of the needles. In that darkness, the others came riding, she used to say, dropping her voice lower and lower. Cold and dead they were, and they hated iron and fire. It's like repeated again. And mm-hmm. the touch of the sun, and every living creature with hot blood in its veins. Holdfast in cities and kingdoms of men fell before them as they moved south on pale dead horses leading hosts of the slain. They fed their dead servants. Yeah, it's almost exactly. That's later on in John 7. So, yeah, just interesting. Leading host of the slain. It doesn't really say one way or the other, you know, whether or not they're... I feel like they have had some physical touch on that person. That's just what I think.
That's where I'm at. Yeah, that's where I'm at. I just... In the books... I mean, well, I say we'll see, but you know, I mean, we never know, right? Because I just feel like if they could just simply raise any skeleton that's ever existed, well, God, how many skeletons are there over the history of time, right? I mean, tons of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So.
Right. So yeah, they have to kind of have had a hand in their death, and then they can kind of, you know, raise them and. I don't know if they have to have had directly killed them or if their whites can kill them. And then that's an extension of their own essence or whatever. And so then they can raise those people and so on. So,
okay. All right. Well, hey, thanks, Jeremy, for sending us that Raven. If you want to send us one, be sure to send it to btkcast@gmail.com or on our website, Bend the Knee Podcast. You can send a Raven there as well. And Ez, do we have any other kind of last little bits of information here?
Not really. I guess the only thing you remember where I was talking to the other day about some of this stuff with the gods and the power and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Were you taking me serious?
I mean, man.
Yeah, you know, it seems kind of crazy. I just want to say because I think I said this last week too. I just was a little blown away that I saw an interview with him, and I want to give this, again, out there for people to think about, where George basically said, somebody asked him, you know, will we see sort of like a god step out onto the stage here? Will we see them manifest in some way or whatever? And I think George actually says, like, I think he directly answers and says, you know, I have no intention of, like, bringing a god onto the pages of my book. And he says, as a matter of fact, I don't know if they even exist. Right? The writer says, I don't even know if these gods exist. Is he just messing with us, or what's going on? Right?
I think, like, so. I think more often than not, he says his answers are so elusive, right? And he wants people to dive deeper into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like he wants, I mean, because what I'm doing is like, okay, was he being literal? Like, he actually doesn't know, or is he just saying, maybe they're not even real? You know, like is that what he's saying? And it's sort of, he went on to talk about how his view on the world, that, you know, he's not so sure that he's a believer in an almighty, you know, one power that rules all things. And so the conversation, and I was, again, I'll have to find a link for this theory, is that it turned to more of a conversation about magic and life energy being transferred and blood magic. And when you look at the magics in these worlds, you see a connection between this blood, or the payment for, you know, death being life or life being death, whatever, you know, back and forth, and that sort of ebb and flow. So it's, I don't know. That's the last thing I wanted to think of. I've been thinking about it. It's something I want to look into more. And every time now I come across a weirwood, because I think about skin changing and I think about all these different things. I'm like, well, how are they able to do that? Like, who gives them these powers? Is this just it's a completely different world, and we don't you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't maybe understand the biology of it or whatever. Watching that one panel and hearing him answer that question, I just sort of went, what? So, I don't know. If anyone else has seen it, or you guys think it's interesting, or you want to, you know, talk more about it, or you have some thoughts and theories on the gods and their actual, you know, existence or what have you. I was watching another one today talking about, who was it? Urine, Greyjoy, and just like a god among men, and the idea that one would want to be the destroyer, essentially, and want people to worship him, and the mockery. And again, everything that he's doing with all of these holy men and these priests and these blood sacrifices, and there's power in holy men and their blood. That's what he says. And Melisandre says there's power in the blood of kings, you know? So it's just,
it could just come down to belief, right? Like, just the people believing in things gives things power.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Just something to think about, because I was like, I don't know. It's got me questioning everything now in this series. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, all right, guys. And then again, just keep an eye out on our YouTube page. We are going to be doing a lot more just like small little one theory episodes. And sometimes if you guys send us a raven, we may do it just on there, just dedicate an entire episode to it. And then also, Raven's Nest is March 15th. We haven't nailed down a time just yet, but we will do that because, again, we deal with people who live all over the world, so we want to find kind of, you know, a decent time that kind of works for everybody. And other than that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 14, Arya 4 of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that the night is dark and full of terrors.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.